Hey, it's Kristen. You're listening to Rational in Portland.
I'm here in the studio with Pete Colt from Northwest Portland. There was just an article about you, Pete, on KATU.com, December 4th, 2024. I was reading it and sent it to you right away because we already had this podcast scheduled. We'll talk about it in a minute. Pete, welcome. Thanks so much for coming.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And I want to thank my friend Tara for referring you to me. I've heard from so many of your neighbors in Northwest Portland about, why don't you tell us what's going on around there?
Okay, so the story starts about 17 years ago. I was walking home from my boyfriend's house past Trinity Episcopal Cathedral, and it was on Northwest Everett and there's a little retaining wall. There was a woman sitting there with her purse open, and I thought she was, you know, asking for money. So I went to put money in her purse, and she looked up, and she had no face. And so it was sort of like, what do? You comfort that person. You find out what happened. And what had happened was that a bunch of homeless guys that Trinity had allowed to camp on their Everettside property had grabbed her, a homeless woman named Jan, off the street and beat her savagely and gang raped her all night long and left her there with two cans of beers in her purse. Well, we sat there. Me being obviously gay, she probably didn't have that kind of reaction that a woman would have to another man. She opened up. I got her mother and father's phone number down in Temecula, California. And along comes an officer responding to the 911, Larry McNabb. And I always have to say this, a great name for a cop, Officer McNabb, just like Officer Kill we have today. And he took her to the hospital. She was released. Her father called me and said, Jan's out on the street again at a place called Lloyd Center. And so I borrowed Dennis's car, my boyfriend, and there she was in the parking lot of Dollar Tree by Lloyd Center. Now, I got her in the car and took her out to the hospital in East County this time. The good news is they helped her. They sent her to Salem, and she was in recovery and went home to Temecula. Finding that woman set me off, because as a little boy in the Bronx, I lived in the projects. I was raised in the Red Hook, which is a very bad project in Brooklyn, and Bronxdale. And in the next building over was Sonia Sotomayor, who went to school with one of my brothers. At 12 years old, I would wheel my stereo out, and the black women would come down, and they would all have some fried chicken for us, and the Puerto Rican women would make pastelas, and we'd turn this room into a little place, and we'd all hang out and play big whist, little whist, and spades. So it's in my blood. And I started picking up all the garbage in the neighborhood, back to what happened after Jan, and removing all the graffiti in the neighborhood, because you have to have eyes on the street and no broken windows to prevent crime. Long story short, picking up garbage all these years. Trinity has always been, back in those days, it was prostitution. The prostitutes were in Trinity's parking lot on Northwest 19th, and they were also in St. Mary's parking lot on Northwest 18th, and our place looks out at both of them. And so I'd be out at 2 or 3 in the morning. Dennis would call and say, "Hun, where are you?" I'd say, "I'm out chasing criminals." Larry McNabb, the cop, says to me one day, "Mr. Colt, you know, you need to buy yourself a gun. There's a whole bunch of really bad people after you because you're disrupting their business." And I said, "Look, I'm from the Bronx in Brooklyn. I don't need to buy no gun, but thanks anyway. So long story short, the internet comes along, you know, and everything takes off. The prostitution moves to online. The neighborhood looked really, really good for a few years. Then comes a meeting. Then comes us. We vote to invite all of the drug addicts in the United States to Portland. We made a mistake. We said, "Hey, come here, do your fentanyl."
Are you talking about Measure 110?
Yeah.
Decriminalization of drugs.
Yeah. In fact, the very first meeting that I had to organize the neighborhood, which was this past August the 1st, was when I stood up to talk. I said, "The reason that we're here and that we have these problems is because of me. I'm one of the ones who voted to invite everybody to come and do their drugs here."
Oh, I did too.
Yeah.
I mean, the majority of us did.
I think the reason that I voted for it was because I had seen what happened in Portugal. They did it better than what we did. They had it so that you had to go immediately into therapy or treatment.
Well, they had rehabs and detoxes built out first.
Right. What we
But also, they don't have guns or fentanyl.
That's right.
I didn't learn that until after Aaron Schmaltz went on the trip that the Drug Policy Alliance who brought us Measure 110 invited our Oregon leaders to go on. And when he came back and said that, I just said, I don't need to hear any more about it. It's not relevant to us. I think we're done here.
The problem with our state is this. I sent a letter, I sent an email to every single senator about what's going on with the 5150s and with garbage in the neighborhood.
Mental health. Calls.
Let me back up real quick with the, when I pick up garbage every day, the biggest thing I see are cigarette butts, and the filters are indestructible. They're fiberglass. Every time somebody eats a fish or somebody in a restaurant orders a fish dinner, I think to myself, they're eating cigarette butts. It goes into the river, goes into the ocean, goes into their fish, goes into their tummies. Not a single senator replied to me. In that same email, I talked about the lack of compassion in our state for people who are having mental health crises. And there was a woman laying in front of Trinity about 2 months ago, naked, at noon. I called Portland Street Response. They showed up. But because she said, I'm okay, they had to leave her on the street. At 8 o'clock at night, PPOP came and started handing out syringes on Northwest 19th at Cooch.
Explain to us, that's an acronym?
Yes, People's Public something of Portland. These people are not nice people. Let me tell you what they do. They come at 8 o'clock at night every Friday night to Northwest 19th at Cooch. They hand out syringes, they hand out aluminum foil, and they go. They do not hand out sharps containers. They do not collect any used syringes. They just come and they go, and then the next day or two or three, there's nothing but syringes all over on the grammar school property, primary school property, preschool daycare property, syringes everywhere, Northwest Hostel syringes blocks from where PPOP does this. So our state and our 5150 needs to change. It needs to be that a police officer or a doctor or a nurse can see somebody having a mental health crisis or a drug crisis. For example, 5150 says if you're a danger to self or others, immediate. But to me, if somebody's doing a hit of fentanyl or somebody's shooting themselves up, that's a danger to self. If they're doing the fentanyl, then they're also a danger to you and to me as we walk by if we accidentally inhale that. They should be immediately put on a 5150. That's at the state level. At the county level, we have Peterson. There was a book.
Right, the chair, Jessica Vega Peterson, yeah, chair of Multnomah County.
Right. Back in the last century was a book called The Peter Principle, P-E-T-E-R, that a man will rise to the level of his incompetence. Here in Multnomah County, we have the Peterson Principle. She has risen to the level of her incompetence. I think she has a very low approval rating.
Yeah.
I think it's very well earned. I think she's never going to get reelected in this town. She's going to be as toxic as Sam Adams is.
Do you really think that's true? I given the elections of Megan Moyer and Shannon Singleton, and of course, Shannon Singleton ran the Joint Office of Homeless Services for a period of time. I mean, they're aligned with Jessica Vega Peterson. Those are the two people that are in her lane that were running, and they won sort of handily. And so if I were Jessica Vega Peterson, if I were the chair of Multnomah County, I'd be feeling like I've got a real mandate here. I can do whatever I want.
I think that in 2 years when she's up for election again, the people of Multnomah County will have a different point of view about this about the county. I think that...
How do we get through to them? Because obviously in this last election cycle...
We don't get through to the county.
That didn't work. Well, I guess how do people get through to voters?
Let me back up here again, please. What happens is the county hands out tents. The county funds something like PPOP to hand out syringes. Mm-hmm. The police arrest someone. I see this all the time. And then when I say this all the time to the listeners, I mean I see this all the time. I go out and I'm on the streets picking up garbage. And I see when the police are arresting somebody, or I'll call 911 and they'll show up. The police will arrest someone in 9 hours later, that person's back on the street because of Peterson, because of her catch and release program, because she will not open up Inverness, where we have 250 beds available that we've already bought and paid for. So rather than have to deal with Jessica Peterson, if you're hearing the sound of my voice, I really please stop for a minute and think about this. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and over again. Why would we want to keep Portland as part of Multnomah County? This is the point at which we, the people, have decided to change our local government to a different form rather than the commission form. Why not take it another step further and do what Cleveland, Ohio, Denver, Colorado, San Francisco, California have done and have the combined city county of Portland? What would this do for us? It would stop Vega Peterson and the county pointing their fingers at the city and saying the city is responsible for this. The city really doesn't point the finger so much at the county. The city pulls out of things from the county rather than point the fingers. But we need to have the courage to start to pull away from the county. And I can't encourage you, listener, please, just think about the benefits to all of the taxpayers. Something nobody wants to talk about is this. If you pay rent in Portland, you are a property taxpayer. You pay your property tax through your landlord because what you're paying for his or her rent is paying their property tax. That gives you the same property rights, in my opinion, as somebody who owns a single-family house. If you rent or own property, a single-family home, for example, in Portland, and you feel like you're getting screwed by having to pay for parking, having to pay for all the infrastructure things that go wrong from the county, then let's divorce the county. Like I said to Peterson just this last week, I will see you in divorce court. That's the goal, to form that city. Back to Trinity.
You went, just to clarify a couple things, Pete, yeah. You went to a county to testify.
I testified virtually.
Can you talk a little bit to listeners about, I mean, I think it's relatively easy. I think it's much easier to testify at county than city. Can you talk to listeners a little bit about what that process is like and why people should do it?
I think that it's very, very simple. You simply send an email to the county, and the county clerk will respond to you and tell you what days. Well, they meet on Thursday, and you have until that Wednesday evening before Thursday to register. They have a limited number of seats available, so get in early, and then you just testify from wherever you are. Virtually. It's very, very simple. And I have to say the city was just as easy because I testified at the county and then I testified at the city, and the city was just as easy to do. And here's the difference between the city and the county. Wheeler heard what the people in my neighborhood, Michelle Mila and Dave and Laura, were saying. They understand that the hot spots are Northwest 19th, between Burnside and Cooch Park, Southwest 13th, that whole strip along the freeway, and now around Lincoln High School. Around Cathedral School, things are starting to clean up very nicely, actually. The cathedral has hired security. The parents are very involved. The crime is going down around 16th and 17th and 18th, but it's still there over on the fentanyl corridor, Burnside to Cooch Park. On 19th.
So I'm going to go ahead and link to some information that people can look at if they want to testify at city and county. What would you say, Pete, to people who might argue, why would I do that? Why would I take time off work to do this? Because it's not going to make a difference. I mean, since you've testified, it's not like everybody's running out to fix this.
I think the reason to testify is a feeling of self-satisfaction, that I myself have done something, that I have raised my voice and shared what I'm thinking and what I'm feeling. I have to agree with you. A lot of times it's just a dead end. But, you know, the fact that I can do that virtually is a big plus. The other thing is that we in our neighborhood formed a group called Stadium Hood, and Michelle Mila is the head of that organization. Stadiumhood.org, just like it sounds, stadiumhood.org. I would encourage you to subscribe. There's a map of what the stadium neighborhood is. It's easy to figure it out. The stadium is the center of it. But in that neighborhood, we have four schools. And we have a preschool from birth to 4 years old. And this is why we're really, really, really focused on cleaning up our neighborhood. The other thing that we in Stadiumhood have realized is this. here in Portland, there's more than just our neighborhood in Northwest Portland and Southwest Portland that are dealing with all these problems. There are neighborhoods throughout this city where the drugs are rampantly done on the street with impunity. And one of our goals is to make the mistakes. We know we're going to make mistakes. But as we make the mistakes, we're making a template that we want to share with other neighborhood associations here in the city. This is what we did to organize. And the very first thing we did was meet at St. Mary's Cathedral in the Cathedral School gym and get ourselves organized. Now, when you walk through our neighborhood on Northwest Cooch or Davis or Everett on 16th, 17th, 18th, 19th, and Trinity Place, you're going to find neighbors that you didn't know a year ago, that you're now going to Thanksgiving dinners with, you're going to bars with, you're having good times with. The most important thing that you can do if you need to change your neighborhood is to talk to your neighbors, shake their hands, and have a conversation about what is wrong with our neighborhood, how do we need to organize it, find a core group of 4, 5, 6, 7 people, start a text chain with and limit it to those people who are the initial core, and then have other means for people to contact you, for example, through stadiumhood.org. And what's wonderful is that when you have a team and there are 5, 6, 7 people on that team, each one brings to that team a unique characteristic and a unique ability. The people that I'm on this team with, I have so much respect for their brains and their drive. I admire their skills and ability so much. Together, we are so much more than what I am by myself, is how I feel about the whole thing. And if you're listening to my voice, believe me, if this old man can do it, I'm 70 years old, and I walk with a limp. And if I can go out there and do this stuff and be unafraid, I know that you can do it too. And that's how I feel about it.
Pete, are you retired?
Yes.
What did you do during your working life?
I was in marketing. Yeah.
So what kind of things did you market?
Hospital chains and big medical practices. Long before the internet. I got out just before all the, you know, hit the fan with the internet and
oh,
all that.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
So you were doing what? Print work and copy?
Print and print, radio, and news. Lots of media buying.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. And ads probably too, and sort of figuring out placement.
Yes. Yes. And lots of popular, because my degree is in sociology. So it was like a natural
thing. Where did you
go
to college?
UCSD.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful school.
It was even more beautiful in the 70s and 80s when it was just nothing but trees.
I bet.
It was so lovely. In fact, I remember when they chopped down a whole copse of trees, somebody in the theater group put a whole bunch of white crosses on the tree stumps. And because they had been laid out in a grid, it really did look like a cemetery. It looked like Arlington for trees.
Wow.
Because the Santa Fe Railroad planted all those trees thinking that they could have used them to make railroad ties, and they found out the eucalyptus are very soft wood.
So how did you end up in Portland?
I broke up with my ex, and I said I can either stay here in San Diego and have to deal with all the crap that's going on down here in the traffic, which I hate to drive in. Being a native New Yorker, I didn't drive until I was in the military, and they said to me, Airman Colt, you need to learn how to drive.
What branch were you in?
Air Force, the steak and lobster branch, I call it. Yeah. I joined during the Vietnam War, actually, because I wanted it, because I felt it was my responsibility to go, and, you know, 17 years old, and I had to wait till I was 18. It was my responsibility to defend my country. Well, I know better now that it was a bad war, but back then, in 17, 18, you believe the powers that be. So,
did you assume you were going to be drafted anyway?
No, I didn't. I wanted to volunteer.
Yeah.
And I have this theory that because I volunteered, they sent me right back to New York. I think they sent the draftees over to be cannon fodder. But the people like me who volunteered, they probably thought, oh, he'll be a lifer. He'll stay here 20 years. We'll keep him safe. Yeah.
But you were, instead you decided to be discharged, and what did you do, like a GI Bill and go to college?
Yes, I did, actually, because when the war ended, Nixon said, if you want to get out, you can leave, because, you know, why pay people for something that you don't need anymore?
Sure.
The GI Bill was wonderful, by the way. The GI Bill I was under is very different from the GI Bill today.
In what way?
In what way? It was the World War II GI Bill with all these really great benefits. I think today you have to pay into things.
Okay.
Yeah, and that would, no.
I think it's still very helpful for people.
The best thing about the military is the health care. And also, if you want to buy a house, they'll really help you buy a house. So if you're thinking, oh, how am I going to get a house? Go sign up. If you're thinking, oh, I see somebody in my family who's elderly, who's really struggling to pay for health care, go join the military, go see the world, and when you're in your 60s or 70s, you'll be thankful that you did.
And retirement benefits.
Retirement benefits are the health care. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I got hit by a bus, they fixed both my hips. That's why I limp.
Wow. Okay. You were hit by a bus.
Yeah. Well, you know, things happen.
When was this?
This was maybe 7 years ago.
Where?
Yeah. Where? In Catania, Sicily.
Wow.
I know.
Oh, my goodness. How scary. Yeah.
My boyfriend speaks Italian. Right. My boyfriend is fluent in Italian because he went to school in Florence.
Okay.
Yeah, so he found me. He walked for miles. I didn't know where I was with hospital. He walked for miles and found me in the rain. So it's like, I got a great guy. What can I say?
So you found Portland because you wanted something smaller?
Because I had heard Portland was like New York City. And when in other words, walkable. Walkable. The big thing was walkable and bikeable.
Did you find that was true?
I found this was much easier for me than New York.
Yeah.
Yeah, much easier because it's so tiny.
Smaller.
Yeah.
It's more manageable.
It's easy to walk, for example, when you're in your 50s, it's easy to walk from like Northeast 73rd to Northwest 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
Smoke a little bowl and poof, put your headphones on and just boogie. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, certainly today. Even. Yeah, you can do that. Walking past anybody.
Yep. Yeah. Because once I put those headphones on, I don't walk down the street. I dance.
Oh, my gosh. Do you still listen to music, or do you find that, like, at least...
I love to sing and dance.
Do you?
Oh, when I go out with my friends in their 20s, I will outlast them. I'll go to the break of dawn.
Do you really?
Oh, yes.
But where do you go to do all this?
Oh.
Not here.
No. When we're overseas.
Yeah, you got to go to a different city. Yeah.
Here we all hang out at the different bars.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's not a ton, I just found there isn't a ton of nightlife.
What I love about Germany is this. The Germans are like this. They wake up in the morning, oh, the sun's shining, let's have a beer. Or they wake up in the morning, oh, it's rainy, let's have a beer.
Yeah, well, that's true.
You know, the Canadians are the same way. You know, you sit on a bus and you see some 18-year-old drinking a beer on the bus, you go, eh, that's kind of nice, actually. Here, we need to get... If you're listening
to this...
Here
we're a little too loose about all... Now we're smoking fentanyl on the bus.
Yeah.
We've taken a little too far.
it's with impunity. Back to that woman that was laying on the street naked.
Please.
I call them at noon. Portland Street Response comes. She's still there at 8 o'clock. At 8 o'clock at night on that Friday night, who was on the corner 100 feet away? Peepop. Me, Dennis.
And this is the group that hands out drug supplies.
The drug supplies. The women there started calling us molesters and perverts and leave her alone and don't touch her and don't go near her because all you want to do is see her tits. And I'm like, I'm gay. I really don't really care to see her tits. But, oh, yeah, you're a pervert. You're an effing pervert. So we call and the Portland Street Response comes out. They can't do anything about it because she says, don't touch me. Midnight, I look out my window. There she is in the middle of Northwest 19th, naked, with her arms raised and her back to the traffic. And I'm thinking to myself, that is the look of someone who wants to be hit from behind and not know she's going to exit this world. So out I go. And somebody had already called Portland Street Response again or called 911 because as I got there, the police got there. And the police said the same thing to me that I'd heard over and over again. We can't do a thing. We cannot put her on a 5150 as a danger to herself because she's lucid. And I said to myself, that is probably the moment at which a person is the most lucid, is the moment at which they decide, I'm going to kill myself. It takes a lot of lucidity to get to that point, a lot of thought, I think. But the fact that these women at Peepop were trying to prevent us from helping this woman just because we're men, really, has it come down to that in this country, America? Is it not okay for a man to help a naked woman? Because I'm thinking to myself, it's not the guys doing the fentanyl that are going to rape her. It's the drunk coming home from a bar or the one hopped up on crystal that's going to see this very attractive woman, by the way, naked and on the sidewalk. This is what our city has become. I also want to talk to the new city council, if any of you are listening. First of all, congratulations. You had to work your butts off to get to this point. Congratulations. The next thing to do talking about changing the government is this. What does Selwood have in common with Old Town? What does Old Town have in common with Selwood? Why are we having a representative that represents both Selwood, Old Town, the Pearl District, and Northwest District? Why don't we have a person for Selwood? A person.
Well, they're going to say it's population-based, so they had to loop the West Hills in with somebody else.
That's what they said. That's a lame excuse. That's not. That's a very.
I mean, I don't think they're going to change it, Pete, because these geographic districts got all these people elected. So
that's a good point.
If you're in, you're not going to touch this thing.
That's a good point. Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't.
You're screwed, people. You are really screwed.
And as far as I know, I don't know that there are term limits.
I'll tell you who's screwed. The people in Northwest Portland, the Pearl District, and Old Town are the ones that are screwed. Why? Because what Randy Leonard told me years ago was this.
Remind us, Randy Leonard served.
Oh, God, back in the 2008?
City Council.
City Council. Mm-hmm. He said, who gets elected in this city? You get elected by the people who are the four for four voters. The people who have voted in the last four elections are the people who voted me in and all the other city council members. And where do these people live? They live in Irvington. They live in Selwood. They live here. They live in Westmoreland. They live
like
in Eastmoreland.
District 3's turnout was incredibly high.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which was really interesting to me. So inner southeast.
It's not the population that lives. It's not the population that lives in Old Town.
Right, that's true, and it's not the population that lives in District 1, which is the poorest and the most diverse. I mean, that was the lowest turnout.
And those,
I think, that's predictable.
And that's what they take advantage of. That's exactly what. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right about that. I'm wrong. They're in power now, but. Let's looping that around. Yeah. That's another reason for them to vote to distance ourselves, to divorce ourselves from the county, because they themselves then will have the power
the
of the purse.
The council has to do that, Pete.
That's right.
They're not going to do that.
You don't think so?
No, because these are people who are aligned with Jessica Vega Peterson and her agenda.
Oh, I'm talking about our city council.
Yeah, our city council.
Right. Oh, I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I mean, they're for all this. I mean,
Portland.
The majority anyway. Well, I mean, we've got people who were Democrat Democratic Socialist candidates, DSA candidates on city council. We've got people who, police defunders on city council.
Speaking of defunding the police.
I mean, this is who we put in charge of us. I don't see them being interested in getting rid of tents and tarps or needles anytime soon, do you?
Not if they don't live with it every day. And
I
they
mean,
don't.
I think people like Eric Zimmerman in District 4 and Dan Ryan in District 2, they're in the minority. People who are not part of, who are not interested in Portland continuing down this path, they're, I mean, as far as I can see, they're in the very, very teensy minority on city council. I just don't. I mean, I'm sort of amazed that they got elected.
It's a very, very sad state of affairs that Portland creates conservatives one liberal at a time. After you've lived here a while, you have to realize
conservatives for here. Because I mean, when we were off air, you know, you and I talked about how we're not
real conservatives like Trump or anybody like that. No, we are moderates in the rest of the country. But here in Portland, we're conservatives.
Well, and in the rest of the country, we might be considered leftists. It's just
that's
Portland is such a strange place politically that it's hard to live here and view anything objectively, especially after you've, I mean, I've been here. Well, I mean, I was born here, but I came back as an adult in 2004 and it's hard to see anything objective. I mean, even down to my vocabulary, you know, I find myself talking about things like homeless encampments when really these are open air drug markets and sex trafficking operations.
They're talking about putting in garbage cans in the Northwest District when the real problem is this. There's a garbage can right now on it's a blue recycling bin on Northwest 19th at Davis, and there's one at Northwest 19th at Cooch. Do you know what's all around the street still? Garbage. Because the truth of the matter is homeless people on fentanyl, people on drugs.
Yeah, they're not gonna
and they're not the same thing.
Can.
They're not going to look for a trash can.
They're
and then,
not
you know,
functional.
And they throw it on the ground right at the trash can.
Of course
can.
They do.
By the way, property owners, if there's a trash can on the sidewalk that abuts your property and that trash can is overfilled and the trash falls on your sidewalk, you know who's
responsible?
That's right. According to
the
city.
You're responsible to maintain your sidewalk.
That's right.
And so if somebody's hurt there, that's on you.
That's right. You have all the disadvantages of paying to keep the cracks out of the sidewalk. You have to find a company to come and fix the pavement. You have to prune the trees 7 feet
right.
high over the sidewalk, 7.5 feet where cars
park.
It's
relatively oppressive.
And?
But you have a lot of duties.
And you get no benefit,
and
no tax benefit.
And the city and the county are making it really difficult to do what you're allegedly supposed to do.
This is how cities die.
I think that's right.
This is how cities die because there are many, many people fleeing Northwest. What happens when a city dies is this. The landlords, the property managers, the owners of the old apartment buildings start to lower the rent to attract people. And then they keep lowering the rent and lowering the rent and lowering the rent and lowering the rent. And to you liberals out there, to you progressives out there, you have to hear what I'm saying. I was raised in the projects in the Bronx and Brooklyn. I know what happens, and you don't, unless you were raised where I was raised. What happens is when you have low-income people around, you're going to have garbage, you're going to have trash, you're going to have drugs, you're going to have graffiti. End of sentence. That's the way the world works. And so that's how city dies. The center of the city. That's my glasses crashing.
Oh, we'll take a second.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Thank you.
Go ahead, grab them. You got it? All right.
Yep, got them.
You know, Pete, I'm looking at a KGW article about PPOP, this Portland People's Outreach Project, and it's from February this year. And it says that it acknowledges at the outset that homeless people addicted to drugs go to the South Park blocks in Southwest Portland, and they get food 3 times a week, but then they also get drug supplies from PPOP. In this article, they're talking about the South Park blocks by Southwest Jefferson and Park, where public drug use is common. And PPOP's argument, based on what I read in this article, is that we deliver drug supplies, but we also deliver Narcan, and we Narcan people. And a representative from PPOP is saying that he's Narcan people like 30 times in just the past calendar year, and that's why he thinks PPOP services are important. And so what would you say to that argument?
I would say hand out the Narcan, but not the syringes. And furthermore, if you want to hand out syringes, then you need to legitimately collect the other syringes that you handed out. By the way, when people talk about harm reduction, here's another thing. Nobody has the actual data about whether or not harm reduction works. And the reason is this. The only way you're going to know if harm reduction works, you have to pick up the syringes and you have to run the DNA analysis of what's in every single syringe. If there's only one DNA in all, 1,000 syringes, right? And let's say half of them have only one type of DNA. Well, then the half of the people are not sharing their needles, right? The syringe is the evidence that people need as to whether or not this harm reduction is working or not.
Yeah, I mean, even just some correlative data, I think, would help us. Like, if Multnomah County would keep track of the disease rates and whether or not, I mean, whether we have any evidence whatsoever that people receiving drug supplies funded by the county are, like, such as needles, whether those people have that those populations have their rates of disease are being reduced. And I don't, as far as I know, we don't keep track of that. If
no,
we do, it's
no data
public.
Whatsoever. In the military,
nobody's requesting it.
There's no morbidity and mortality data for the county, none. And in fact, I called one day and asked for data on pedestrian deaths and pedestrian accidents. They don't even keep that.
Yeah, I don't, I mean.
Where's the data,
I mean, I think if they did, they'd have to, this stuff would have to come to a screeching halt And so the only way to keep engaging in this agenda, this ideological, what I would call an ideological agenda, or even, I mean, I'd go as far, in my opinion, to call it a pathology, really. It's like their religion. And to keep it going, that it doesn't work to talk about whether anybody who's getting the needles ends up asking for detox and rehab. And even if they did, we don't have anywhere to send them, as you know, Pete.
Right.
There's nowhere for them to
None.
Go.
Thanks to the county.
Yeah, we're just not opening these places up. We don't seem interested in it on any level.
I think that...
Pete, what happened with these county elections? How do you explain that? Because charter, I think city council can be explained with charter reform, single transferable vote. There are lots of things we can say about city council. County, it wasn't ranked choice. It was a regular election. Given Jessica Vega Peterson's low approval rating, and I'll link to that article in the show notes. She's the chair of Multnomah County. And given that these people who were elected are aligned with her, what happened and how did they get in?
They got in because people don't deal with reality. People live in this little pub. People live in little bubbles. They live in their neighborhoods. They generally go from their car to their house, from the house to the car. They go driving somewhere. When you live in the inner city, you walk everywhere. You actually see what's going on. I think these people are just isolated, insulated from what the reality is in other neighborhoods.
But Pete, like one of these districts, as you know, was your district.
Yeah.
It was Vadim Mazursky's district, Northwest Portland, downtown, Goose Hollow. I mean, you cannot swing a cat without hitting any of these issues that you've just been talking about. It's all out in the open. It's all out in public. Old Town.
I think that the people that you just mentioned didn't turn out at the same rate as the people in Selwood did and the other, the better parts. Why would you put those two? I know, again, it comes to
but
that.
But didn't like the West Hills turn out? Didn't Northwest turn out?
But they are not law and order liberals.
Hmm.
They are that other kind, that kind of like, oh, the world's okay, everything's fine. As long as I'm okay, I'm fine too. Here, law and order to me means that you can walk along the street at night unmolested, mm-hmm. unafraid. And as long as there's one woman who is afraid to walk out on that street at night.
I mean, there's no way in hell.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Then we do not have law and order. We should be thanking our police for making it safer, not defunding them, because law and order means women are safe. At the very, very basic level, it means you can walk out anytime, day or night, unafraid.
Do you feel like you're getting assistance from Portland Police Bureau in your neighborhood?
They have been a godsend. No one has worked harder to help us in the neighborhood than the Portland Police. And as I said to the city council when I testified, I read the names of all of the officers whose business cards I collected from them after I had seen them in the process of doing an arrest. Let me tell you the fact about the Portland Police and not the crap that you hear in the rest of the media and the crap that you hear on TV. Our police, even in the middle of an arrest, show an enormous amount of kindness and patience and respect for the very people they're arresting. I've seen over and over again the police making jokes with them, or the people who are being arrested with their hands cuffed behind their back, interacting with the police as if, you know, oh, okay, the police are not what you see on TV. When you have a chance, I would say go and sign up and go and ride with one of the police officers. I'm going to be doing that pretty soon here. Yeah. Go and do that.
It's a great experience.
It will open your eyes to how kind and gentle these people are.
Yeah.
And how they are able to control their anger in the most difficult of situations. We should be praising our police. Period. End of sentence. Again, I come from a background where I know when I was a little boy in
We've
the Bronx.
We've been in a lot of cities.
Yeah, I have. When I was a little boy in the Bronx, it was this era. People would start a fire, and the fire department would show up so that the people could snipe them. That's the neighborhood I grew up in. I don't want to see Portland become that, but it is on that downhill spiral, because people in the better off neighborhoods who don't have to deal with this stuff never get it.
But isn't it spilling over? Isn't it? I mean, it's in my neighborhood. I can tell you that definitively.
Really?
Oh, absolutely.
That's when things start to change.
Oh, my neighbors are resuscitating people on the Max platform on their way to work.
That's a terrible thing to hear. But that's how things have to change. The better off neighborhoods have to start feeling the same kind of impact that the other neighborhoods are feeling.
Yeah, I think that's right.
It's just because you only learn from experience. And sometimes, in my case especially, you have to have that same experience over and over and over again before you learn.
But downtown Portland used to be usable. It used to be walkable. It was safe. Relatively safe.
Even at its grittiest.
Yes. In the 70s, I mean, I know people, I have family members who were mugged, you know, who worked downtown at Myron Frank and things like that. And it wasn't the very best place for sure. You know, it was a big city just like anywhere else. And crime did happen and person-to-person crime happened and scary things happened. But it was gritty. It was gritty. There was a really edgy sort of punk scene going on. There was a fair amount of alcohol. There was some heroin.
But it wasn't like this.
Everybody will tell you it was not like this.
It was not like this where you have...
Before the Pearl District was developed. It was before, you know, when Northwest was a scary place,
mm-hmm.
frankly.
Mm-hmm.
It was different.
I arrived in 2004 myself. So
oh, sure.
Yeah. It was gritty, but it was not unsafe.
Right. No, I mean, as a kid, we went. And it wasn't... My parents didn't have any thoughts about it. Now I don't take my children downtown.
Dennis,
and I'm not going to. I don't have plans to do that.
No. Dennis and I were walking home one night along the Max line from downtown to Northwest, and they're on Southwest 13th, literally 50 to 60 people doing fentanyl right there in the corner.
Yeah, it's typical.
And it's like, what are you going to do when you have that many people and you're defunding the police?
Well, and to be fair, we're not defunding them anymore, but it's hard to roll that back, isn't it?
It is hard. It's very difficult. And, another thing, please. To all of you listening to this, when you're walking down the street and you see somebody doing drugs, openly doing drugs, you are obligated to call 911.
That's true.
You are obligated.
It's okay to do it. Please do it.
More than okay.
Please
more
talk about
okay.
your experience yes. doing that, because everybody's terrified to call 911.
Oh, I was too initially. So I get that whole feeling.
I do too.
I mean,
it became a cultural
right.
No.
The very first time I called 911, I was like, they're going to arrest me for calling 911.
Right. I know.
Right? So I get that whole
for
fear.
For abusing it or something.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I know.
So I get that whole feeling. But what happens actually is this. You start to feel empowered because you've made that first call. You know, and then you make that second call and the third one, and the 911 dispatchers, I want to thank you because I call you guys very, very often to the point that sometimes they'll say, is this Pete?
Oh, how funny.
It is funny, isn't it? But they will be.
But they don't chastise you. They don't say, stop calling.
No. They want you to call. Why? Because it feeds the system. Because when you call 911, where you are is logged. And if more and more people in your neighborhood are calling 911 about what's going on in your neighborhood, the police are going to be pushed into your neighborhood to clean it up.
There's data to support a presence.
That's right. So call 911. You will be empowered. And then the other number to remember is going to be 311. If you have any kind of, by the way, 311 call takers, I want to thank a big shout out to you too, because every time I've called you, like when I call 911, you guys are great to me. If you are any problem at all, and I mean any problem at all with city or county infrastructure or anything going on, call 311 and they will refer you to the proper person. I've done this so many times, and so many times they've gotten me to the right person that I needed to help me. So those two numbers are the really two numbers that you need to know.
Pete, I'm looking at this KATU article that you're quoted in that I'm going to link to in the show notes. And the date of this article is December 4th. So this is pretty recent. And it says, I mean, this is just, I've sent it to a number of people and I highlighted this section. And it's very upsetting to hear. So I just want to let everybody know that I mean, not like the rest of the show isn't upsetting, but this is pretty upsetting. What I'm about to say, it's a quote from you, and it was to city council. And you told Portland City Council you've seen old men push women down to their knees to perform oral sex on Trinity Episcopal Cathedral's property.
Yes.
Northwest 19.
Just about maybe 15 feet from where I found Jan on the Everett side of Trinity, right? I'm doing what I call PD patrol. My neighbors all know me, little bucket picker-upper.
Your neighbors do know you. That's how I heard about you. Yeah. You've made quite an impact.
And so I round the corner from 19th, and I'm heading up Everett now towards Trinity Place, and there's a ramp, a handicap ramp, right? And there is this old man pushing this young woman down to her knees and behind some bushes because Trinity has not cleaned the bushes. And I'm like, I ran up to them. Hey! In my deepest dad voice. Hey! Shocked, right? And it was like, you know, the same place where Jan had been raped. This woman is being forced down on her knees.
When was this?
This was a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, recent.
It is just terrible.
And was this the first time you've seen this?
Oh, no. On the 18th, I saw the same thing. They about a month before that, an old man tried to take this young girl up under some trees. And again, I'm like, hey, I got an eagle eye for an old man.
Did these women appear to be inebriated?
These women are, in my opinion, are this. They have been led down a path to do drugs. And this is how they're going to get their drugs. They're going to pay for drugs with oral sex. That's what my opinion is.
Yeah.
It's a horrible situation.
It's especially
for young people.
And as a mother of daughters, in any context, it's heartbreaking. But I think about things like that. And it's the kind of thing that you might hear about regularly if you lived in the projects in the Bronx, probably. It's one of the worst neighborhoods in New York City.
Two women in my tribe are in there. Now they're in, when I met them, they were in their young 23, now they're 27 and 26. And they were walking from Slabtown to come hang out with me at my place, and then we were going to go bar hopping. And they said, we walked by Trinity, and guess what? Everybody was shouting, I got 20 bucks for you, I got 20 bucks for you, because they're very, you know, they're young, they're beautiful girls, right?
Wow.
So it's, and way back when, after I found Jan, even women in their 50s and 60s who lived in the Northwest Tower would say, hey, Pete, I can't walk down the street, I'm 50 years old, why are these men offering me money for oral sex?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
It's not normal.
It's not normal. It's normalized. It's normalized.
It has been normalized.
And it's not.
And I think a lot of people would walk past some young woman being pushed down to, for lack of a better word, blow somebody, and just keep going. I mean, I don't know that a lot of people would stop and call 911. I don't know that they would. And I think most people in the city of Portland were also used to people engaged in public drug use or sprawled out on bodies all over the sidewalk. We're walking by.
I don't. I never do. I am compelled to help. It's just how I was raised.
And it wasn't. And so you didn't have to be woken up to a point where you started to have to see that this was not okay and that you were going to start doing something. You've always been like this?
Always. This is the gift of my parents and the nuns. And the nuns. I went to Catholic school for 12 years. And back then, in the sixth grade, for extra credit, we would have to, and I would go, the nuns would show us the old black and white films of what was happening in Germany at the concentration camps.
Mm-hmm.
So in my young little head, it was drilled in that my responsibility is to make sure this never happens again to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always grateful to nuns, no matter where I am. If I see one, I'll run up to her and say, thank you, sister. I'll tip my hat and I say, thank you, because of you, I'm the man I am today.
And you're saying not necessarily, another Holocaust is a little too on the nose, but just bad things happening to people.
Right. For my generation, our parents were involved in World War II.
Right.
So it was very, very close to us because it was close to them. So that is... Oh, and then there was Kitty Genovese. I don't know if you guys look up Kitty Genovese. She was a woman in Queens. Again, I was a boy who was stabbed something like 30 times, banging on people's doors, and no one would let her in as she was repeatedly stabbed, going door to door to door. Now, how is this even possible, right? It's because people are afraid to get involved. Look, I'm 70 years old. I've been involved all my life, and I've made it this far. The other thing I need to say to all y'all listening to this is this. Grow some balls. Grow some ovaries, okay? And do what's right. Don't go with the flow. Be the flow. Be the source of change. Be the one who says to people, I don't believe what you're saying. I don't believe that the world has to be like this. I don't believe that I can't change what's happening in my neighborhood, because you can.
Okay, but Pete, what about people who are listening to this who are thinking, well, Pete, you know, you're getting some media attention. Obviously, it looks from this article, based on what you've said, that people like Mayor Wheeler are saying, you're right to come forward. Thank you so much. We're seeing this as an issue. You're getting more of a police presence. But things seem to be worse than ever in your neighborhood right now. Like, what kind of an impact has been made, really?
The impact has been that stadiumhood.org and the core group, I'll get texts from them at whatever hour, this is happening, and I'll go. Now, what happens is we have a core group on Northwest Cooch. And this core group on Northwest Cooch, which is a main thoroughfare for the drugs and has been for years, for prostitution and drugs from Old Town all the way to 19th and to Trinity. There are people now living on Cooch at 19th, Cooch at 18th, Cooch at 17th, and they are calling the police and reporting to the police, and it is finally starting to diminish.
You think it is? Yeah. You think this is working?
I think what it is the neighbors.
Are they being pushed elsewhere, though?
The neighbors, yes, and that's what's happening.
Which is too bad, and so that means
that somebody else has to pick up the problem, and that's what they need to look to Stadiumhood to see the kind of template that Michelle and Laura and Karen and David
and, you know,
Pete, and
what
Dr.
I think
Chris
about are like neighborhoods in District 1. You know, those are the neighborhoods that, for instance, there wasn't a ton of turnout in District 1 for, like, city council, for example. And that is the most, it's the most diverse, it's the poorest, it's East County. And this is like single mama working five jobs. You know, they just do not have time to do this kind of thing. And there is to be clear, there is the Lentz neighborhood, the LNLA, and people from the LNLA have been on this show, and they are active, and they do talk to people like Todd Littlefield, people like Juanita Swartwood, people like Sharpenny. They're doing everything they can over there, the Lentz Neighborhood Livability Association. But holy cow, Pete, I mean, most people over there just don't have it in them. They don't have the calories. And I'm just really concerned about how things are ultimately going to go, right? Because things get pushed over there.
Yes, they do. The thing to remember is this.
Who's going to galvanize?
911 is your friend. And the other thing to remember is this. There was a time when Portland had 1,200 police officers. I think something like 1,000 or 1,200 police officers. It was down to maybe like less than 300 now. We need more police, not less police, not fewer police. We need more. We need very well-paid police women and men, because that's what it's going to take for these neighborhoods to be cleaned up. You're going to have to pressure the city council to, you being the listener, you're going to need to pressure the city council to hire more police. And if it means cutting jobs in other parts of the city, so be it. The other thing that you, please, listener,
boy,
remember,
I am,
911.
I'm concerned that's going to fall on deaf ears, given
really?
The composition of that city council. I sure am.
Well, we have a city manager now. You see, the city council is
our city manager.
I forget his name. He starts on January 1st, doesn't he, when the new city council starts?
Is it Mike Jordan, who I think was the mayor's sort of right-hand person? I'm pretty sure
Yeah,
it is.
Because it's not the city council running a silo anymore, which is a good thing, actually.
No, I know. Yeah, they're not running bureaus, but they're legislating.
Let's see how they...
I mean, they're a legislative body.
Yeah, let's give them 6 months to see how well they do.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
Because there's 13 of them, right?
I thought it was 12.
12?
Three times four.
Then, yeah, and then we have the mayor, so 13. But the
right.
mayor doesn't vote.
For a tiebreaker.
Yeah. We'll see how they do in 6 months. We'll see what happens.
What do you think of the mayor? the new mayor.
I'm going to give him 6 months, too.
Keith Wilson.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I feel sorry for Keith. Keith is a nice guy. And what I will say is I think just like with the economy nationally, I think the mayor gets the credit or the blame for anything that goes on in this city. And it's probably the most thankless job in the entire city. I think the Multnomah County chair is the most powerful job in the state of Oregon that nobody sees. But I think mayor is one of the least powerful. But for whatever reason, it's got some kind of outsized figurehead style media
role. I agree with you.
And everything is blamed on the mayor. I mean, for rightly or wrongly, in regard to their position on various things. And I don't think, you know, Wheeler was super helpful in 2020, to be clear. I don't think he was super helpful. But all of that said, I don't know that he deserves all the blame for all of it. I mean, I think County, who's supposed to be in charge of addiction and homelessness, probably deserves most of it. But, you know, they're not visible. And the mayor's visible. And despite this new system where the mayor's just a tiebreaker and there's less power, really, and the mayor's not running bureaus and won't be running, presumably, won't be running the police bureau, it's interesting to think about. I mean, it just depends on who runs against him in the next election. But it's interesting. I just don't see a situation where, unless the candidate running against the mayor is absolutely horrific, like a Sarah Yannarone or something, I just don't see a situation where any mayor who makes some attempt or makes some go at that job isn't run out of here with pitchforks.
I think that good luck getting the churches and the places involved that you want to get involved, because all it's going to take is a rape or a murder in their property to have them say, no, I don't want to participate in this.
But you're saying you think that there are crimes, pretty serious crimes, happening on these church properties, and that
drugs are crimes, and the drugs,
there doesn't seem to be a
drugs
lot
are
of
crimes, and sex crimes are a result of drugs.
Movement.
None
on those issues.
Trinity has now hired a woman as security. She texted me the other night for help.
Okay,
I was out one night.
Wow.
Doing my little patrol at about 11 o'clock at night, after Dennis went to sleep, and I saw a security truck, and I wanted to introduce myself. Oh no! What happened was there was a homeless man on the sidewalk, right? And I thought, uh-oh, he's on the sidewalk. He had a walker, so I went out to see him, and here she comes too. And the guy wanted to be left alone, and I saw him again the next day on Trinity's property on Everett doing drugs, Marty. And Marty is a single mom with an 11 and 13-year-old working at a night shift as a security guard on Trinity's.
Wow.
I know.
Amazing.
Right.
What an amazing woman.
She texted me the other night about, I don't know, I got the time on my phone. Hey, Pete, come down and give me a hand. This guy wouldn't leave. Downstairs. Got out there. She calls me. She says, he heard a male voice and he left. You know? I said,
that's all it took, huh?
Yep, that's all it took. I said, you text me anytime, day or night. I'll always have my phone by the bed. And the moment I see it's you, I'll always come down and help you. You know? And the odd thing is these people are not allowed to carry mace or bear spray. The ones that work at St. Mary's, I said to the guy, Ray, hey, you know, here I carry my mace all the time.
Probably not because of liability.
Right. I'm like, that's security?
No, I know. Pete, what do you say to people who would say, look, Pete, these are scary individuals. These are people who are on scary drugs that make them necessarily unpredictable. There's probably an intersection of mental illness going on here. Aren't you worried about your own safety?
Oh, yes. That's why I carry the mace. And that was a recent thing.
It's recent.
Oh, yeah. Up until 6 weeks ago, I never carried anything.
Wow.
Right. But the reason
changed?
What changed is my neighbors were concerned. They kept saying, oh, you know, you need to
understand.
Yeah. So I said, okay, I'll just carry this stuff and make them all happy.
Well, I'm sure your boyfriend's relieved.
Hey, what a
that
saint.
Poor
what
guy.
I'm Buttercup. He's the prince.
I mean, I don't know that I would sleep if I were him and you were out running around 11 p.m.
He doesn't,
doing some kind of patrol. That would be difficult.
It is difficult for him, and he's been like a rock about these people. I would be more concerned about a drunk man than a man high on fentanyl. The fentanyl wipes them out. They become little zombies. You've seen them all the time. Everybody listening to this, you've seen them bent over, like stooped over, like they're picking strawberries.
I've seen both. I mean, I've also seen what my guess would be, and I have it's not like I did a tox on these people, but what my guess would be is some kind of combination of mental illness, fentanyl, and methamphetamine. And it's a different story. I mean, those people are wide awake. And they are aggressive.
I have, in this past, let's say since August, I have been afraid 6 or 7 times, I would say.
Yeah, I think that's a lot.
To me, it's not.
For you, probably not. If you're out on patrol every night.
Yeah, and more than every night, every 2 or 3 times a day as well.
Wow.
It's really fun. Yesterday, I was walking on my little PD patrol, and one of the cops pulls up, rolls down the window, "Hey, Pete, how's it going?" I walked over. He had a ride-along. Remember, guys, do a ride-along with the cops. You'll enjoy it. He goes, and I'm carrying my thing. He goes, "Have you used that yet?" I said, "Oh, no, no. I dread the day that I have to mace somebody. I'm not looking forward to using this at all."
Right.
You know, it was like, oh, no. It would be just, I would make feel really bad about having to use it on the person, and then, so,
what did you have to do a ride-along? Like, what do people need to know if they want to do that?
Just get a hold of the police department. Just call 311 and have them refer you to that. That 311 is going to be the answer to everything.
Tell them you want to do a PPB ride-along.
Yep, that's right. Yeah. Same thing. By the way, thank you for listening, and while I have your ear, if you are in a scooter or a wheelchair, you have a lot of power that you're not using. And here's your power. You call 311 and you tell them, "I can't get my scooter over this crack in a sidewalk." Poor property owner has to take care of it, not the city. "There's a bush that prevents me from seeing around this corner as I'm wheeling myself down the street, or I can't see the traffic." You call 311 and tell them that you are part of the Americans with Disabilities Act, and that you need to have either the street light changed or the walk sign changed or the sidewalk fixed or a bush removed that's blocking your view. So please do that. You people who are not in wheelchairs and scooters, you have the same ability. But I really want to emphasize this. If you have mobility problems, use your power. For the rest of us, use that number 311. If there's a crack in the sidewalk, if there's a crack in the sidewalk, a tree blocking your view, if there's a street light out in your neighborhood, or you need to have a signal changed or whatever, 311 is going to be the place that you go for anything for the city or the county.
Pete, is there anything you want to say before we close here? Anything we haven't talked about, or anything that you think is important for people to know?
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming.
This has been fun, actually. I've never seen or heard a podcast before, so this is kind of cool.
Well, hopefully you'll listen to yours. Maybe a couple others while you're at it. Share it with a friend.
The biggest thing to do is to have hope. The biggest thing to do is to think that in spite of what seem to be all these insurmountable obstacles, and there are many, and sometimes I myself feel hopeless, and I feel like things will never change, but I still keep going with the glimmer of hope that a fate will change something, or a word will change something. Sometimes people have walked up to me, like about a month ago, I was in the library with Dennis and a friend of ours. She's a new psychiatrist. She's 32 years old. And a woman was up to me with her dog and throws her arms around me. She says, "You've made me get a little house. I'm off the streets now." So, you know, you have these little victories. And that happened again.
Is this somebody you interfaced?
I remember another time a woman ran up to me and said, thank you. "You kept chasing me around when I was trying to do John's. You're always calling 911 and I finally got off the streets. I'm not a prostitute anymore." You know? So you might not have a big victory, but you might have a little one.
Those are pretty big.
Yeah, but for those women, yes. Yeah,
that's their lot. Those are their lives.
Yeah, thank you for putting that into perspective. Yeah, because I was
huge. Yeah. No, that's huge.
Thank you.
You should be really.
That's
very moving for me to hear.
So don't give up hope, because you might not be able to change the system, but you can change somebody's life. And the life that I've changed the most is my own, by having the courage to live by my convictions. So that's what I would say is listen to grandpa, grandpa, an old man.
Pete, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. I really had fun doing this. Have a good time, everybody, in life, and don't forget to party. Not that way, though.
I like that. It's a positive, uplifting message. Thanks, Pete.